There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Very good afternoon. Welcome back to The Grill. Just gone 4:05 on your Saturday afternoon. Keep your thoughts coming into us on 4001. Join the conversation with us. If you want to share anything, ask us a question, please do so on the text lines. We are keeping you up to date with what is going on from a sporting standpoint this afternoon. And before we move the conversation on, I'm keen to discuss Daniel Ricciardo. Big news out of Formula One over the course of the past 24 hours. And Conor McGregor as well. Big news out of the US overnight. We will discuss both of those stories in just a moment. Before we do that though, let's put you in the picture of what we have witnessed thus far today. We will start at Edgbaston, Birmingham, the first test between England and India. It's all over.
It is indeed. England have won the first test match in Birmingham by 31 runs. They've dismissed India today for 162, which means it's a 31-run victory. It was very tense at stumps or going into day four today. India were 110 for five. But up popped the man of the moment this morning, Ben Stokes, with three big wickets, including the captain, Virat Kohli, LBW, for 51. He then took Shami and the wicket of Pandya to wrap things up. So England are victorious in the first test match, 31 runs victory for them. First of five test matches. Second test match gets underway at Lord's, the home of cricket, later next week.
The bar has been set high. Fantastic victory that for England. We will hopefully have some reaction from Edgbaston to bring you for over the course of the next hour or so. Joe Root, Virat Kohli will have been speaking after that victory for England. It will be an oh-so-painful one for India. Virat Kohli's job now is to pick up the troops and go again later in the week. What about the golf? We discussed it before we went to the news headlines. The WGC Bridgestone Invitational. You're keeping an eye on it, Carl.
Yeah, as you said it there, Chris McCarty. Top 64 golfers in the world, all in LeBron James's territory, or should I say the old LeBron James's territory, if Cleveland, Ohio. And what I can tell you, it's a very much of an English flavour to the top of the leaderboard. Ian Poulter, he is tied at the top of the leaderboard with Tommy Fleetwood and as well as American Justin Thomas. They are on 11 under par. Of course, Ian Poulter shot lights out at opening 62, the best of his career. Behind them, we've got the Australian Jason Day at 9 under par. Rory McIlroy, fantastic two opening rounds, a 65 and a 67 from the Northern Irishman. He's at 8 under par. And then, of course, followed at 6 under par by John Rahm and Tiger Woods.
Just speaking on LeBron James there, I don't know if you boys saw it. He gave an interview with CNN over in the States in the past 24 hours, has LeBron James. The conversation quickly doesn't just turn to basketball, as you'd expect. It turns to politics. LeBron James makes it very clear that he's not a fan of President Trump. And President Trump just couldn't resist. He's gone on to social media to call the journalist the dumbest man. And I'm laughing at this. It's typical Donald Trump. He's accused the interviewer of being the dumbest man on the planet. He's also then said, I like Mike, at the end of his Twitter rant. So essentially what he's doing there is adding into the conversation who is the greatest of all time. In the case of Donald Trump, I think he is very much of the opinion
he's
of
also
Michael
had
Jordan.
He's also had a go in the same tweet at LeBron James,
yeah,
saying he thought the interviewer is quite a dumb guy, but he also thinks LeBron James is a bit dumb as well.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, Donald Trump.
On a lighter note, though, fantastic what LeBron James has been doing with all the schools in Cleveland, Ohio. And I think, you know, that's something fantastic. I mean, ultimately, one of the greatest basketball players that has ever played the game, that he's giving back to the community, Chris McCarty.
Absolutely, yeah. We saw that news this past week. He has opened a school with the help of the council over there, the Ohio Akron. He's opened a school for young kids, I think upwards of 240 kids. He's providing bikes for them all as well, education, kids that have perhaps fallen off the rails a little bit, and it's a fantastic initiative. LeBron James again putting back into the local community before he heads off to LA and to Hollywood. What are we expecting, Archie, from LeBron James this coming year in the NBA? He is undoubtedly the best player in the NBA. He is one of, if not, depending on who you talk to, the greatest of all time. Hasn't got the tools there. That's what we all thought, that he'd bring a Kawhi Leonard to perhaps Hollywood. That hasn't transpired. He's gone to Toronto. He may well end up at LA next year, but he's off to Toronto for a year. Will this be very much a transitional year for LA? Is LeBron ready for one of those?
Well, I don't think, you know, at age 33, LeBron's ready for transitional years. He wants to win now. He wants to add rings. I don't think he's going to be able to do it in year one. The West, as we've talked about, is so stacked. He's got to get past Golden State, and they got stronger in the offseason. They've got to get past Houston. They got stronger in the offseason. So he's going to do a good job if you get the Lakers into the playoffs. to give them a chance. But they're only going to get the 7th or 8th seed, I would have thought, at best, which means he's going to take on Golden State or Houston in the first round, because I'm expecting those two teams to be as dominant as they were. You've got to remember, Houston was had the best record in basketball this season. Golden State finished second in that, and then they went on to win a back-to-back title. So it's a tough task for him. But what I'm expecting, though, is the LeBron James will be making a few phone calls. I'm sure he's had this chat, and I would be incredibly surprised if Kawhi Leonard doesn't end up. He got traded from San Antonio up to Toronto. It's a move that he was very vocal about not wanting at the time, but he had a little choice. That's the way the trade business goes. He may end up, he's only got 1 year left in his contract. He'll run that down. He'll play it out. They may try and trade him before the end of the season to get something back for him. Otherwise, you lose him as a free agent.
Yep.
But Toronto gave up DeMar DeRozan to get rid of him, to get Kawhi Leonard in. They'll be trying their best to convince him that he should stay. Toronto had a wonderful record in the East this year. I think they might have been the best team in the East. So they've got a decent side there. But unless they win a world championship, which is unlikely because they're not going to get past whoever wins the Western Conference, I can see Kawhi Leonard joining LeBron. Then you've got a team. You've got some serious pieces there. They can add some more. They can be trying to balance their salary cap and try and come up with some pieces. Then they've got something really interesting. But the West is so tough. It's so stacked. It's LeBron James, if he can get the Lakers into the playoffs and get them going in the right way, then will he run out of time? Let's wait and see.
But you've got to ask yourself the question, besides the financial gain, which we know is, rather healthier, but like your salary, Chris McCarty, but besides that fact, you've got to ask the question, if LeBron is chasing rings at the age of 33, surely it was the wrong move for him to get into the Western Conference. Because to your point, Arch, the teams are so good there. I mean, you know, you've got the Houston Rockets, and of course you've got the defending champions. So for them to even get into the playoff on a Western Conference perspective, I think it's going to be very, very difficult.
Yeah, I do think, and I take your point though, Archie, that he is 33 years of age. He can't wait around, but it would suggest he signed a 4-year deal, didn't he, worth about $154 million and then some, which will come in through endorsements. It is almost, and I know Magic Johnson was speaking over on the Jimmy Kimmel show in the US, I think it was last week, and he was talking about the fact that they are ambitious, they want to put a team in place for LeBron, but he also said an interesting thing. He said LeBron is aware of our project. That to me suggests that there is going to be a bit of patience there, because they're not going to have the tools in place. I know they've got a couple of young boys, Lonzo Ball, the boy Ingram as well. He's a talented young guy. That's not going to take LeBron James to a championship, not in its first year, certainly. We're looking at years 2 and 3.
The whole rationale is, look, he could have gone to a number of clubs. Where did he have his best chance of winning? Probably not the Lakers.
No.
In this year, maybe in years 2 and 3, maybe. But look, if he wanted to get to the finals, look, wherever he goes, whether it's in the Eastern Conference or the Western Conference, he's still got to get past Golden State or Houston at some stage. But you have a much chance of progressing all the way through if you're, say, in the Eastern Conference, which he did with Cleveland when he was at Cleveland, when he turned them back into a winning side. When he was down in Miami, they were winning because of LeBron. Yeah. If he'd gone anywhere in the East, it was a game changer there. He's gone in the East and into the Western Conference. It doesn't upset the balance card because, I mean, they had 4 All-Stars at Golden State before they got DeMarcus Cousins.
Yeah.
Boogie Cousins coming in to make it 5. So, you know, it's tough, but it's going to be a fascinating NBA season because for LeBron going to LA, the world's his oyster there. He's going to be in movies. He's going to have all sorts of commercial projects. It's whether he can stay focused on his basketball as well.
I would have liked to have seen him maybe go to Philadelphia, who've got a young team. Ben Simmons, of course, who's come to the fore, the young Aussie. You look at the East now as well, with Cleveland not the force, you would imagine. They're not going to be a force now with LeBron James moved on. Boston, they'll have Kyrie Irving will be back fit, Gordon Hayward back fit, and they did remarkably well even getting to where they got to without those two major pieces of what they do. You'd expect Philadelphia to be strong again, and Toronto now with Kawhi Leonard. So in the East there's 3, in the West there's probably 3 if you throw San Antonio Spurs into the mix with Popovich. And
I don't think the Spurs would be as strong. No.
DeMar DeRozan?
Yeah, I mean, he's a good player, but I think the West is so strong. That's a straight-up swap. You've got to remember that Kawhi Leonard didn't play this year. Yeah. He pretty much played a dozen games, and him going to Toronto, he's got to prove his fitness. So it's a big gamble whether he's actually going to, you know, how his injury is going to recover and is he fit to play. So, I mean, you've got all sorts of good teams, though. Utah had a good, decent year. You know, Oklahoma, they've got rid of Mallow and got Russell Westbrook and who was going to go to, we thought the player that was going to go to LA didn't go back home. I mean, it's just so strong.
It is. Cannot wait. NBA season. Of course, before the start of the NBA season, there is the small matter of NFL ticking around as well. Been interesting to watch Tom Brady. I was going to say LeBron James there. He's not switching over to NFL. Tom Brady is back, looking good. New England Patriots have made some changes, some big changes. The big news, I guess, Rob Gronkowski, after threatening to quit at the end of that disappointing Super Bowl defeat to the Eagles, is sticking around, and hopefully he can have a successful and a fit season, and expecting big things in the NFL. You've been keeping an eye on it, Archie. You've been looking at some of the teams' matchups, etc.
I haven't seen what's been happening too much in preseason. The players now, the teams will be all doing their camps. They'll be in the preseason camps, and they'll get underway in September. They'll start playing preseason games soon, but don't read too much into that, because the star quarterbacks, the likes of the Bradys, and the guys that have been around the league a long time, pretty much don't play. They come in and play a half of the last game and then get straight back into it. So a lot of players still vying in free agency or walk-ups to try and get spots in teams. But, yeah, you'd expect the Patriots to be strong. The thing about the NFL, which is great, is you can see teams be weak one year and be quite strong the next year. It's a very level playing field with how the system works. So, yeah, looking forward to the season. But to be honest, haven't thought too much about it yet.
Carlito, you're an NFL man?
The thing that I love the most about the preseason is the way the players arrive at a training camp. They're arriving in helicopters and all these fancy sports cars. And it should be an interesting season. Of course, myself, Dolphins for life. So let's hope the boys from Miami can have a better season than what they did last season. But I think, you know, from that perspective, you know, you have to go with the big ones. Interesting to see, will this be Tom Brady's last season? That's kind of what I'm interested to see. And I thought that if they maybe had won the Super Bowl last year, he might have, you know, said, okay, that's enough. I think he's 39 around there. So I think it will be interesting to see if it will be his last season in the NFL. But once again, I think we're in for a fantastic season.
Expect some big things from the Dolphins this year. Danny Amendola is off there as well.
I saw that. So
you've got a weapon.
We're hoping for the best.
Yeah, looking forward to the NFL season. It all kicks off next month, of course, and I am excited. It does feel a long time since that Super Bowl, and what a thriller it was. Of course, the Eagles getting over the line against the Patriots. That was back in February. Next month, it all kicks off once again. We'll keep an eye on that. When we come back, we're going to stick stateside because Dana White, the UFC president, delivered a quite fascinating press conference last night. He left it late to reveal the biggest announcement in UFC for a long time now. We'll discuss Conor McGregor's return to the octagon when we come back.
This is The Grill, bringing you the biggest sports stories right now on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Welcome back to The Grill. Chris McCarty, Mark Archer and Carl Van Rosenvelt with you through until 6 o'clock this evening. We've put you up to date with what went on in the cricket a little earlier today. England getting the runs, getting the wickets, I do apologise, that they needed. They have won by 31 runs. We've put you up to date with the WGC Bridgestone Invitational Leaderboard. Let us tell you very quickly, before we talk all things UFC, what happened in their rugby a little earlier today. It was Mark Archer's New Zealanders Crusaders against Carl Van Roosevelt's second team after the Sharks, the Lions, from South Africa, of course, and it was victory for New Zealand.
It was indeed, 37 points to 18 victory by the Crusaders, their ninth Super Rugby Championship, and they've gone back-to-back to be Super Rugby Champions. 4-2, tries to Timavivalu, David Havili, Mitchell Drummond and Scott Barrett for the Crusaders. Tries for the Lions, Kyle Brink and Malcolm Marks went over in the second half. Man of the match was Richie Mo'unga, the man putting a lot of pressure on Bowden Barrett to be the fly half for the All Blacks this year. He may just have to wait a bit longer, but that's the case. Rugby Championship gets underway in the next 2 weeks away, I think, Carl?
Correct.
Gets underway, so we're looking forward to that now. Of course, the All Blacks, the Springboks, the Wallabies and the Pumas will go head-to-head over about a two-month period to see who is the dominant team in the Southern Hemisphere. And that's it. Super Rugby done for another year. The Crusaders are the champions. 37 points to 18. That was the victory against the Lions in Christchurch today.
I might sound silly asking this question, and don't laugh with me asking it. You talk about the Rugby Championship. That takes place 2 weeks' time, so that's, what, mid-August. This will be the last one before the Rugby World Cup final?
No, there'll be another one next year. They'll do a truncated version in the World Cup years. It's usually don't play as many matches.
So they'll bring it forward, or will it still be in the
same
slot?
They'll bring it forward because the World Cup's in October, November, and then the Rugby Championship's always August, September.
Okay, so there will be one next year. So we've got the Six Nations. We'll have another two of those, one of those before the Rugby World Cup final. Next year, of course, over in Japan and the Rugby Championship. New Zealand, just hand it to them now, or are we expecting a greater fight from your boys?
No, absolutely. Just give it to them now.
What talking about rugby championship.
Yeah, give it to them now and just save me the time of getting frustrated on the couch. To be perfectly honest,
no, I think it's a year out from a World Cup. I think some of the teams, All Blacks included, may try a few combinations, may try and give some players some experience. I think that the All Blacks probably are due to lose two matches. They'll probably, I think South Africa and South Africa, particularly if the match is in Johannesburg, they'll have the edge there potentially, South Africa, at altitude. And I think Australia probably due a victory over the All Blacks as well. But we'll see how that plays out.
Before you answer that, Carl, we were talking in the week about defeats that hurt us. Myself and Mark Archer, I was speaking about Manchester United losing the Premier League title to Arsenal back in the 2001-02 season. Mark Archer was talking about losing to you boys. He said it didn't hurt that much back in 1995, the Nelson Mandela story, of course. He talked about the French. Surely for you, was it not last year that you boys went down 57-0 to the Kiwis?
Don't remind me. Every time we lose to the Kiwis is heartbreaking, and it's happening a little bit too often for my liking of now. But yeah, absolutely.
Was it 57-0?
It was a demolition of the Springboks, and I think have to give credit when credit's due. I think New Zealand rugby at the moment, if you look at them, they're in great shape. That they seem to have really, their development program really seems to have been working well, and this rule that they've got that overseas players cannot play within New Zealand hasn't affected them at all, and they just seem to be producing these world-class players just coming through the system. You thought that a guy like Baden Barrett would dominate the number 10 All Black jersey for the next 5 or 6 years, and all of a sudden, I don't even think he's had it for 5 or 6 months, taking it from Dan Carter. He's got this youngster basically, on his back, and I think that just defines how strong All Black rugby is at the moment, and going to the championship, I hear what Arch says, but I don't think they'll have any problems. I think they'll cruise through quite comfortably.
Seeds of hope, though, for the Springboks, Carl. You've new coach in there, in Rassie Erasmus, who seems to have found a way with the players. He seems to have got the camp moving in the right direction. Obviously, a good series victory over Eddie Jones in England, which is that's a great win for them, and plenty, I think, of things to be proud of and moving forward for a World Cup in next year. There's no reason why the Springboks can't sort of cause an upset. I mean, we talked about looking forward 12 months to that World Cup. All Blacks and the Springboks are in the same pool,
yeah,
which is going to be really interesting, because the way that then throws the whoever loses that match gets thrown into the other side of the draw. Albeit, you look at the history, All Blacks have never lost a pool match in a World Cup, which if they get past South Africa, it means that South Africa are destined probably to play Ireland in a quarterfinal of a World Cup, given the form now, and Ireland have a really pretty poor record at Rugby World Cups, I wouldn't surprise me, and this is a long way out still, if South Africa get past Ireland in a World Cup quarterfinal. I have no doubts they could win that match. In a one-off match in Japan against Ireland, not in their conditions, I'd give the Springboks a pretty good chance of getting past Ireland in that match.
I don't often agree with Archie, and I'm not going to agree with him once again, because I think that Ireland, to me at this moment in time, depending if they can keep Sexton fit,
yeah.
To me, him and Conor Murray are the instrumental two players. If they can keep those two players, I feel that Ireland is actually one team that could challenge for the 2019 World Cup. Saying that, though, I have to agree, Rassie Erasmus, I wouldn't say he's turned the box around, but the box are looking a lot stronger. But I still feel that in key positions, South Africa haven't quite got their combinations right. And I think what will hamper their chance in the Rugby Championships, that, for example, Dwayne Vermeulen and the instrumental number 8 won't be playing. Of course, he's not being relieved from his club. So it's going to be dependent on how we get those combinations going, and also what players from the overseas clubs will be available, I think, which will make it very, very interesting.
You've made an interesting point, and it's an obvious one, that New Zealand continue this conveyor belt of talent. Mark Archer, I'm looking at you here. Give us some names over the course of the next 12 months. Who's going to emerge? Perhaps names that we aren't aware of that will come in and maybe stake a claim, and come 2019, October, November, could very well be new names on everyone's lips from an All Black perspective.
I think a couple of guys to keep an eye on. I think, obviously, we've talked a lot about Richie Mo'unga in the last couple of weeks. I expect Beauden Barrett to still be the starting number 10.
Yeah.
Going into that situation, but and the unfortunate thing for Richie Mo'unga is he probably won't make the squad of 23, because they'll use Damien McKenzie, yes, as, yeah, the impact player to cover 15 and cover 10 and maybe play on the wing. So you can't pick a specialist 10 on your bench. But if Beauden Barrett was injured, I think they would then definitely look to go to Richie Mo'unga ahead of Damien McKenzie to start. It's a very similar situation they had with Lima Saipoanga in recent years, who really only covered 10 and looked like a world-class fly half. He got limited opportunities, but when he did, he grasped them and played really well in some test matches. So Richie Mo'unga is a guy to look out for. I think the Crusader centre, Jack Goodhue, who doesn't do a lot of flashy stuff, but he does a really good job in the centres for the All Blacks, depending on which combination they go with. Ryan Cotty will be there, but I wouldn't be surprised if they look to use him in that centre combination. He might burst through. He might be a player to look out for going forward. But a lot of the regular faces we've seen over a number of years are going to be there or thereabouts. You know, the back line, a lot of the positions pick themselves, you know, on how that team's going to come together. And I think it's for the first time, I think they said it earlier in the Super Rugby show, it's the first time the All Black selectors actually have the full squad with no injuries to pick from going into the Rugby Championship. Kieran Reid's just come back after being missing for
and
6 or 7 months.
And how well did he play this morning?
Yeah, he did a great job. Even a guy like Scott Barrett, who was influential in the Super Rugby final, probably won't when Sam Whitelock's fit, and of course Brodie Retallick, who's been missing for a number of months now. You put those two locks back in, Scott Barrett's a good option to have coming back into your team.
It's laughable. You're just chuckling away, Carl. I mean, the options that you've got.
Yeah. But
it's scary.
To win World Cups, you need to have options. You need to have depth of cover in most positions, because you're going to go through a campaign. You're going to get guys suspended. You're going to have some injuries take place. And the teams that do well have got lots of experience and got lots of cover. And that's what the All Blacks have always had.
We're a year away. We're over a year away from that Rugby World Cup. I think I remarked on this a few weeks back. We need a new winner, don't we? And again, that's no disrespect to the All Blacks. I mean, they are the very epitome of sporting excellence for everything that they do. But just for the sport of rugby and Ireland, for example, to come through, perhaps, can't believe I'm quite saying this, maybe Scotland can go and do something. They're not going to win it. Mark my words, they're not going to win it. England, we're not even discussing them. They've fallen off a bit of the wagon of late. Of course, Eddie Jones has struggled. Maybe his message failing to get through as it did in the early part of his tenure as England coach. But just feel that rugby, the game of rugby, and it needs a refresh.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, Chris. Interesting reading this week that Eddie Jones is looking to bring John Mitchell into the English, the English group of coaches. Of course, John Mitchell, former All Blacks coach, is now with the Bulls, and you know, I think
former England assistant coach as well. He was assistant coach to Clive Woodward.
He was, yeah,
absolutely.
Back in the late 90s, maybe
97 to 2000, I think it was.
Yeah. But Chris, to your point, I think England once again, if Eddie Jones can get the combinations right, I think that's what he's been struggling with. To me, he still doesn't quite have his starting lineup team, and I think he would have to. Dylan Hartley, is he the right guy? Captain, is he the best player in his position? You know, there's a couple of questions asked. I think Eddie Jones, the big thing for him now is, call it 12 months out, 13 months out, he needs to settle on what team, who he wants as his starting lineup. You know, he's and basically say, look, you guys, you're my starting lineup, you're the guys I believe in, and then kind of build from there. I kind of felt that he started off very, very good, but then he started making a couple of, you know, instrumental changes. He's, you know, he's moving guys around and all these type of things. And I think if Eddie Jones can get that right, yeah, I definitely think England do have a chance. But to me, obviously the All Blacks go in as the favourites. Here we're speaking 13 months out, they definitely do go in as the favourites. But to me, one team that can challenge them at the moment and purely on form is Ireland.
It's going to be a fascinating autumn for Eddie Jones' England, because he takes on Japan, and he should win that match relatively easily. But then he's got South Africa, New Zealand, and also Australia. And that's going to be a critical time for him, because he's had a terrible run. What did he lose? Five consecutive test matches. And he won the final test match, which is a dead rubber in Cape Town against South Africa. He needs to needs 3 wins.
I agree with you.
3 wins in the autumn to regain confidence. It's going to be a telling time also for the All Blacks to see where exactly they are at, because they've got to go to Dublin. No one's talked about the match. Everyone's talked about the game at Twickenham against England. I think the All Blacks going to Dublin and getting a victory, and the All Blacks will probably take one win and one loss away from that series, because it's a tough place to go to, Dublin and Twickenham, to get victories. If they can win one of those matches as well, then that it'll show exactly where they're at. But you've got to remember, a World Cup, it's in Japan, totally different environment. You're not going anywhere, home field advantage. But psychologically, that's 2 massive matches for both all those 3 teams, because if the draw pans out the way we might think it should pan out, New Zealand will take on England in a semi-final, should things go the way they're supposed to. And then going to seedings again, and again, no disrespect to all the other teams, it could be the way the pools work out, a New Zealand-Ireland World Cup final.
Oof.
That's the way the draw kind of brings them together. We know that doesn't always work at World Cups, as we saw in Russia, Chris, but the way, if it goes to seedings, Ireland and New Zealand will avoid each other until a World Cup final, and could play England.
What a final.
In what a
semi.
Final that would be.
Ireland to win by two.
Oh, there's an early prediction, 13 months out. But I am excited, truly. And whether it's riding the crest of a wave of the Football World Cup, I don't recall, me personally, I'm speaking of here, being this excited ahead of a Rugby World Cup final. It's going to be incredible. It's going to be amazing in the sense that Japan are hosting it. I think that country will do a remarkable job in spreading the gospel of rugby. And yeah, I'm excited. Really,
we're
I
going,
am.
Aren't we?
Yeah, we are. Well, that's the plan.
Carl, are you coming?
Oh, is that an invite?
Yes,
then
it
yes,
is. Yeah. Semi-final and final. We're
mind you,
off.
We're only buying tickets to semi-final and final, but we can probably find your quarter-final one.
There we go.
It's already started. 4001. Get us your thoughts. We're still a long way out. The Rugby Championship.
I'll get my Irish jersey ready.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing as well. Scotland jersey, the Ireland jersey. As long as England don't win, I'll still be a happy man. 4001 on the text lines. You are listening to The Grill. We're with you through until 6 o'clock. Stay tuned.
The Grill has all the sport you need right now on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Right, I have been talking up Conor McGregor all show long. I promise you, in this little segment, we will get to Conor McGregor. Before we do that, though, I'm conscious that there is one major sporting story of the day that will have been dominating conversations throughout the weekend. I've got no doubt about that. It is the cricket. It was England against India. The reason I say it was is because we've already got a result. Morning of day four, and it's good news. If you're English.
Yeah, England have won the first test match at Edgbaston in Birmingham by 31 runs. They bowled India out for 162 in their second innings, which means they have a 31-run victory. Ben Stokes took 4 for 40 bowling for England. He took 3 big wickets today, including the key wicket of the Indian captain, Virat Kohli. LBW to Stokes for 51. He then struck with the sixth ball a day to get Murali Kartik caught in the slips. That was Jimmy Anderson. And then Stokes knocked the tail off. Rashid Khan chipped in with a googly to get Ishant Sharma LBW for 11. But a very good win for England. They've won the first test match by 31 runs. It means they lead the series 1-0, the best of five series. It was England's 1,000th test match, so they've got a victory in their 1,000th set test match. They've defeated India, the number one ranked test team in the world. Looking forward now to Lords later in the week when the second test match will get underway.
Absolutely as well. What a start that is to what will be, and it certainly promises to be a fantastic 6 weeks of test cricket over there in England. Now then, boys, I want to talk Conor McGregor. When I say that name to you, what's the first thing that comes into your mind, Carl?
Throwing a bash with ladders or chairs. Yeah.
He's a rogue, is Conor McGregor, no doubt about that. What he does do, though, he makes headlines wherever he does anything. Last night, small hours of this morning, we saw UFC President Dana White confirm that Conor McGregor will be back in the octagon against Khabib Nurmagomedov. He is the Russian, the lightweight championship winner, title holder. The biggest fight in UFC history is what Dana White has called this. It is scheduled for October 6th, Las Vegas, UFC 229. Conor McGregor back inside an octagon. The first time we'll see him back in competitive action, I guess, since the big farce that was McGregor against Floyd Mayweather inside a boxing ring. It has been labelled the biggest fight in UFC history, and let me tell you, Conor McGregor faces a real good test, because no doubt about it, Khabib is a class operator. 26 straight wins. He's never been beaten inside the octagon. And while Dana White has been speaking, and you can imagine, he was the cat that got the cream over this one. There will be huge money going into this fight, no doubt about it. October 6th, we are 8 weeks away from it. He was asked by ESPN whether it was a difficult deal to do, and he had this to say.
Not at all, man. You have two straight killers coming out of the gates that are dying to face each other, and it's what makes Khabib so popular and incredible. He's undefeated, and it's what makes Conor an international superstar. Conor McGregor lays off 2 years, comes straight out the gate, and wants to go right after Khabib. You know, they got the bad blood and all the stuff that went down in New York. It's awesome.
Did it require ever getting in the same room? Because I know you guys had scheduled that a couple of times. Did it ever happen?
We never got together. We never got in the same room. It wasn't necessary. We ended up getting the deal done.
Dana, the last time Conor was at a UFC event, I think everybody remembers what happened, so we don't got to bring that back up. However, is that a concern at all when you have these two guys?
No. I think that, you know, Conor came out and did what he did and didn't expect the results that happened. I'm pretty sure he's on probation right now in New York. I think that we're not going to have any problems with these guys. We're going to have a great fight.
Fight is only 8 weeks away. How do you go about promoting it? Is it promoted? Does it just do itself? Or do you guys have something like a world tour plan?
We're not planning a world tour, but we will do some fun stuff for the media and the fans. And, this is an easy fight to promote, but we'll put in the work.
Between here and now, there are going to be a lot of people, like myself, writing columns about what does this fight mean to Conor McGregor. What do you think is at stake for him? I mean, he just a meteoric rise, but then he leaves the sport for 2 years. He had the boxing match, and we all know why that happened. He made a whole lot of money from it. Is this a crossroads fight? What is at stake for Conor, do you think?
No, I wouldn't say that this is a crossroads fight. This is a very important fight for both fighters, you know. For Khabib, who's undefeated and looked at as one of the best in the world, beating Conor is massive for him. And obviously for Conor, coming back from a 2-year layoff, in my opinion, and it's crazy to say this because of how popular he is around the world, but he's one of the most underrated fighters in the UFC. Everybody thinks because he speaks so well and gets so crazy and everything, it makes him sort of less of a fighter. It's the weirdest thing I've ever seen. When you talk about pound for pound best in the world, this is a guy who's actually living proof of pound for pound. He jumps from weight class to weight class and fights people in different weight classes. He went out and boxed Floyd Mayweather, and he is literally willing to fight anybody in the world who thinks they're better than him. You know, it's what makes him so popular. This isn't a crossroads fight. This is another fight to cement his legacy as one of the best to ever do it.
Yeah, that is the voice of UFC President Dana White. That comes on the back of that sensational announcement that Conor McGregor is to make his first appearance in an octagon since November 2016. He's going up against the Russian, the very impressive Russian as well, in Khabib Nurmagomedov, if I can get that out. Not an easy one to say. I think we'll just call him Khabib from now on in. Dana White has got it down pat. That's what he did. 26 straight victories for Khabib. He is an absolute killer. You heard it there from Dana White. One thing that we should discuss, lads, and it is interesting when you hear Dana White talk up Conor McGregor. He is the ultimate cash cow for the UFC. But one thing, say what you want about Conor McGregor, one thing that you've got to give him full credit for is he never shirks a challenge. He is not one of those individuals that has a promoter that tells him to fight this guy, because yes, you can make a bit of money, you can continue winning. What Conor McGregor has done throughout his career, he's gone straight for the jugular. Whoever's the champion, whoever's the best, I want him. I want to be in that octagon, or in the case of boxing, in that boxing ring with Floyd Mayweather. You got to respect that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, that's one thing that people kind of look up to Conor about. You know, he's never scared of a challenge, and he likes to prove people wrong. And I think at the end of the day, you know what you're going to get from him. You know, a lot of people are questioning his behavior, yes, that and other thing. But I think at the end of the day, it's a bit like people that don't like Tiger Woods. If you like Conor, you don't like Conor, I think he's great for UFC, and I think the UFC need him. And I think while he's in the UFC, it's a better sport for having him there. And as you say, Chris, you know, hats off to him. At the end of the day, he wants to beat the best. He wants to fight the best. And the thing I like about Conor is that he doesn't kind of strategically plan his journey to becoming the champion. No. He goes, I'm ready now. I'll be ready in 8 weeks' time, or however long it is before the fight is, and I want to take on the best.
You said it off air, Mark Archer, that in many respects, Conor McGregor is bigger than UFC itself. I think it was Carl asked you the question, who needs this more, UFC or Conor? I'm kind of in the middle of this. I think they both need each other right now. I think Conor needs to move on. Yes, he banked 100 plus million, and there'll be many out there saying, well, he doesn't need to do anything with 100 plus million. But of course, it's all about legacy. He wants to make more money. He's obviously got plans for himself moving forward. But this is a good time for both UFC and Conor McGregor to come back. The fact it's up against Khabib as well, someone who has, well, absolutely dominated each and every opponent he's faced in the light heavyweight lightweight division, it means that it's perfect timing.
Yeah, all sports need personalities, and I think one of the things with mixed martial arts, there aren't a lot of personalities that come to the mind quickly. You've got to think through it and think who was doing what. So Conor McGregor, with that fight against Money Mayweather, became a, well, say iconic's probably the wrong word, but it became worldly. People outside the sport became aware of him. Now, he then drives the sport forward. So, and he's got the ability to pick and choose. If he doesn't want to fight again in the octagon, he probably doesn't have to. He's probably got enough money now to buy half of Dublin and settle back and retire. So it's up to him, but there's no point for him. You talk about picking and choosing fights. There's probably no point for him picking and choosing his fights at this stage of his career to prolong what he's going to do. You end up doing that in something like UFC and you probably get injured.
Yeah.
So he's better fighting the best, and come what may. If he gets a win, that's great. If he loses, well, he's lost before in UFC, so he's not undefeated. And he'll go on, he'll keep cashing checks. So I think, as you say, it's really important for UFC to keep Conor McGregor fighting as long as possible, keep him in the ring, keep his personality there, because once he goes away, it's what's next. Who's the next dominant personality to transcend the sport? We know that McGregor does that. And what's he going to go do? What's he going to go do? He's, what, 30 years
30,
old?
30.
Yeah. What's he going to do otherwise with the rest of his life? So he can count his money, count his pennies in his bank account there, but he's probably still got a couple of good fights in him. Yeah, he's good, still a good athlete. And before he goes and ends up on Love Island or Celebrity Get Me Out of the Jungle, whatever he's going to do in the future, he's probably got some fights to fight.
WWE has been discussed as well for the future for Conor McGregor. But of course, this coming off the back of avoiding the fact that he avoided, this was last month, jail. That was after he pleaded guilty to disorderly contact. That was following an incident at a UFC media day. Now, the former two-weight champion had faced multiple criminal charges stemming from an altercation in April with other fighters that included Habib. McGregor was filmed throwing a metal dolly into a window, smashing the bus's window that was parked at the Barclays Centre loading bay. That followed that UFC media day. Two fighters were injured. He got away with it. He obviously spent big to ensure that the defence team put together a case that enabled him to get away for that. He has been told he needs to go, and I do chuckle at this one, to anger management classes to try and control his rage and his anger, does Conor McGregor. But the fact that he got away from all of that, I think that was hanging over him, Carl. The fact that he's got over that, away from that, has got off not scot-free, but won't be serving any jail time. And I can't say I was too surprised when that news broke. He can now focus on ensuring that he is primed physically, mentally, for what will be, make no mistake about it, a real tough fight against Habib on October 6th.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the big thing for me, for Conor, was, do you think he was maybe waiting for another boxing fight? The reason I'm saying that is because obviously that's where the big payday is for him. And maybe he didn't quite get the opponent or didn't quite get the fight that he wanted. I always thought him and Floyd might have another go at each other.
Yeah.
In all honesty, I thought that, you know, they might do the best of three series or something like that. And maybe that kind of didn't play into his hands where, to your point, he's got to come back to what he knows, where he made his name for himself. And at the end of the day, yeah, he'll still be cashing checks, not as big as what he'll be in boxing, but, I think he's come out confident saying, you know, I am the best, I can be the best. So I think it's a good move for him. And I'm more than happy to see him back in UFC. You know, he adds to the drama that is UFC.
He most certainly does. I'm just excited that we can start talking about Conor McGregor back in the octagon again, because it was a big farce. Anyone that thought he had a chance of beating Floyd Mayweather, I won't go down that road again. But we're now talking about a proper fight. As I say, Dana White has called this the biggest fight in UFC history, perhaps hyperbole, trying to ramp up pay-per-view sales. But October 6th, Las Vegas, lightweight title on the line. It is Habib. Conor cannot wait for it. When we come back, that was one of the big announcements over the past 24 hours. There's been a shocking announcement in F1 pertaining to Daniel Ricciardo. He's on the move next year. We'll tell you where when we come back.
This is The Grill, bringing you the biggest sports stories right now on Dubai Eye 103.8.
It's gone 10 to 5 on your Saturday afternoon. A big warm welcome back to the show. Myself, Chris McCarty, joined by the big Safa, Carl Van Roosevelt, and the not-so-big Kiwi, Mark Archer, alongside us as well this afternoon. We are going to be discussing the Community Shield. It kicks off, it's one-off match. It's tomorrow from 6 p.m. and then next weekend we've got the English Premier League, the brand new season to look forward to as well. We will be building up to that after 5 o'clock this evening. We are with you through until 6 live from Media City. Between now and then, though, there's also another big story to discuss from the world of F1, because we were all talking about this a little earlier before we jumped on air, because it is a bit of a shocker, this one. Daniel Ricciardo, a man who has won, I think, 2 races this season.
Yeah.
He's finished above Max Verstappen each of the last 2 seasons that Max Verstappen, his teammate, has been competing in F1, and yet he has decided to up sticks and leave Red Bull. Announcement that he's to join Renault from next year. Got to get your boys' reaction to this news. I'm a little shocked, I've got to be honest. Renault, will they be competitive next year? Question mark over that. Red Bull have been there or thereabouts. Of course, won that four Constructors and Drivers Championships with Sebastian Vettel. Shocked by the news that he's off to Renault?
Very, very shocked. You know, I thought that he's one of the shining lights in Formula One, and I always thought he was a great, great talent. Well, I still think he's a great talent. And, you know, the Red Bull car hasn't quite been there this year, but I think every time the car was competitive, Daniel Ricciardo was on the podium, you know, and I still think that to me he was the number one driver at Red Bull. Maybe in the garage it was a different story, and you know, Max Verstappen is this young daring guy. He seems to get a lot of media and a lot of people like him, but I mean, he is out of contract at the end of the season, which is Daniel Ricciardo. There were talks that he was linked with Mercedes, Ferrari, and as well as McLaren. And as you say, he's decided to go to Renault. Is it a good move for him? I personally don't think it is. I would have liked him to stay at Red Bull. But yeah, very, very shocked, Chris McCarthy.
It is an interesting one. Renault, we haven't seen them come to the fore. Of course, they had wonderful success and have had wonderful success in F1. He clearly feels that the sporting, at least what they've offered him, monetary-wise, and we believe he's going to be earning upwards of $20 million per season. That is, well, chunk change. Lewis Hamilton announcing his deal last week or the week before, $40 million. So he's on half of what Lewis Hamilton's on. I think clearly, reading between the lines in all of this, he clearly feels that he has been marginalised by Max Verstappen. Yeah. You said it yourself, for whatever reason, and probably the fact that he comes from a racing family, does Max Verstappen. It was a huge story at the time. He was racing in F1 before he could get a driver's licence in his native, the Netherlands. The fact that he is, and we all as pundits, we look at him, we speak to people in the know, they say he's got that raw magnetism. He could be a multiple world champion. And Daniel Ricciardo clearly feels that Red Bull have put all their eggs into one basket regarding Max Verstappen, and that he's been felt a little left by the wayside. And given the fact he is a talented driver, given the fact that he has actually outdriven Max Verstappen, certainly this season, and you look at the results over the past couple of seasons, yes, he's the more experienced man, but he has been ahead of Max Verstappen in the Drivers' Championship. Clearly, there's been a falling out there. It's blindsided Red Bull. They themselves thought that a deal was done. He was over in Austria talking to the owners, I think, last week. So they've been blindsided by this. But the decision, is it rooted in money, Max? I was going to call you Max Verstappen, Mark Archer. Or is it the fact, perhaps, that Renault have sold him a dream, that perhaps they think that they could go great guns next year and actually put together a championship-winning team?
No, looking at all the sort of the background information that I can deduct through reading a few bits of information, speaking to people, it's about cash. You know, he's not going for ambition. He's not going to a team below Red Bull for ambition. Look, if he's going to go to anywhere he wants to win races and be competitive in Formula One, there's only three teams. We know that. It's Red Bull, Ferrari, and Mercedes. He's not staying at Red Bull. He's not ambitious to stay with them and see where they can go to. He's going to a much lesser performing team. It's very clear he's not happy with the position of being
Number two,
I guess it's fair to say number two, and he's taking a big pay cut behind Max Verstappen, who's 20 years old, and he's a much less experienced driver. So it's about the cash. It's about earning a big paycheck, and it'd be interesting to see that he doesn't go along the same ways as someone like Fernando Alonso.
Yeah.
I quite like Daniel Ricciardo. He's quite a interesting personality. He's quite bubbly. He's quite good for the sport. He seems to have be really good with the media and do all the right things, but he obviously is not happy being basically well behind Max Verstappen in that two-man pecking order at Red Bull. Verstappen was given the third biggest contract in Formula One at the start of the season.
Yeah.
I think Ricciardo, if you were him, you would have gone to Red Bull and say, well, I want to be paid the same. I'm 9 years old. I've got this much more experience in Formula One. I've won this many more races. I've been pretty loyal to the team. Pay me what you're paying him.
Absolutely.
And they've clearly gone, no, we don't think you're the face or the future of this team. That's Max Verstappen. And Renault are easy. They've said to him, well, we will make you the number one driver. We'll put all our resources into you. And we're going to pay you more money. And that's simple as that, really. That's sport, that's business. And he's made a career move to go off and do that.
There's been numerous times over history we have questioned certain individuals. I remember Lewis Hamilton when he left McLaren.
I was about to mention that. You know, we all said that it's going to be the biggest mistake of his career, because at that time he was a world champion with McLaren. And look, by no means Renault is Mercedes-Benz, let's be honest. But You never know. You know, Renault did power, what was it, Benetton back in the days of Michael Schumacher. So, you know, if they can produce a competitive car, it might be the best career move for him. And then, as Arch says, with a wallet full of money, it might just all work out for Daniel Ricciardo, which I certainly hope it does.
What it does mean is Carlos Sainz does not have a seat next year because it will be Nico Hülkenberg that will be the teammate of Daniel Ricciardo. Of course, there will be jostling. There will be things that will move around. Still, Fernando Alonso's future is still up in the air as well. Some suggestions, certainly from Damien Reid, our F1 correspondent. He is of the belief that perhaps Fernando Alonso will look to base himself in the US. He, of course, trying to become just the second man to win the Triple Crown in motorsport. He's won the Monaco Grand Prix. He won the Le Mans 24 Hours. It's that Indy 500 that now, I guess, is his Everest, if you will. So he might move on. There is some suggestion. Christian Horner, the Red Bull tech ops, the head boy there, he has said that they will take their time looking at the various candidates. One name that's been mentioned is the young Frenchman who's been brilliant for Toro Rosso, Gasly. He has done wonders and he is someone very much on the radar. So there could be movement here. Kimi Raikkonen, I know, signed a new deal at Ferrari. Vettel's not going anywhere. Mercedes, Hamilton signed the new deal. Bottas seems pretty happy playing second fiddle to Lewis Hamilton. So there's a big seat up for grabs, though, at Red Bull, and it's going to be interesting to see who grabs it. But the F1 season at large, of course, we're into our summer break. It's been a good F1 season. We're seeing a lot more competition. Three teams, six drivers. When you think of Vettel and Hamilton, Bottas, Raikkonen, Verstappen and Ricciardo, it's made for an actually really enthralling spectacle.
I think the key to that is Chris McCarthy. Ferrari have been competitive. And you know, whenever Ferrari's competitive, we really see a good F1 season. And I think Lewis Hamilton is proving his class. He's been under pressure a lot this season. And every time, you know, he seems to have come through. It could be advantage Lewis at the moment as they head into the summer break. But I think, you know, it's not over by a long, long way of the season. And I think, you know, Vettel, we know how good he is. He's a four-time world champion. And I think if Ferrari can keep giving him that car to be competitive, it will go right down to the wire, which we certainly hope when we'll be in Abu Dhabi.
Just looking at those standings, we talked about it during the week, Chris, but Lewis Hamilton, 24-point lead he's got in his Mercedes over Sebastian Vettel. 5 wins for the Englishman, and of course, 4 wins for Ferrari for Sebastian Vettel. Back in third, a long way back, actually, another 43 points back is Kimi Raikkonen, and then obviously only 14 points back to Valtteri Bottas. Daniel Ricciardo, the man we were just talking about, was in fifth for Red Bull. 2 race wins this season. He's the third best in terms of success in winning races. He's third behind Hamilton, Vettel. So he's done a fair job.
Yeah.
I think he's a talented driver. I think he's got some ability. He can actually really turn it on. He's one of the more talented guys on the grid. And if Renault can find a decent car for him, and they've been okay this season. Nico Hülkenberg's back in seventh. So they've done okay. They're just whether they're competent enough to break in that top 3.
That's exactly it. That's the big question mark. Jürgen, great to have you on the text lines this afternoon as well. Jürgen, I'm sure you will be licking your wounds. I think you're a Lions fan, Jürgen. Do confirm that if you're not. Of course, the Crusaders winning that Super Rugby final. But Jürgen's been in touch to say Kimi Raikkonen to Red Bull. I don't see it. Red Bull have often had a succession plan. Toro Rosso is their feeder team, if you will. That's somewhere where they've looked to groom. Certainly in the case of Sebastian Vettel, he came through the Toro Rosso. And from all that I'm reading on this particular subject, Pierre Gasly, the Frenchman, is someone who is not nailed on, because Christian Horner has said they will take their time, due diligence, to look at all of potential drivers, candidates for that seat. But Pierre Gasly has impressed the Red Bull owners, and he would be the front runner at this stage. Kimi Raikkonen himself, I'm sure he's just signed a new deal at Ferrari. And again, Kimi with Max, maybe a little experienced head there to help.
No, he doesn't look. I just think even from a personality fit, you know, Kimi Raikkonen isn't a Red Bull driver, is he?
No.
They go young. They go young and talented. And they'll find someone with a lot of upside and invest in someone, I think, that they can groom as to be a good teammate with Max Verstappen.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that front as well. But the F1 season has been fantastic. It's now off for the next few weeks. They come back, Belgium, August 26th, and it will be Lewis Hamilton who is in the driving seat. Pardon the pun. He is going for a 5th F1 world title. And then, of course, he will set his sights on Michael Schumacher's record of 7. It's not over yet, though. Sebastian Vettel with dreams of winning a 5th title as well. But I, for one, have enjoyed this F1 season. I'm still all for your qualifying idea, by the way, Arch. I've been telling everyone that will listen about it. I think that's the best idea you've ever come up with. Any regular listener will know, and we've bleated on about it, just making one or two modifications to qualifying, and Formula 1 would be in a real good place, no doubt about it. It's just gone 5 o'clock. We're into the final hour of this afternoon's grill when we come back. Still plenty to discuss in the world of sport. We'll keep you an eye on all the live action, whether it be football, whether it be golf as well, and we're building up to the start of the new football season. The Community Shield tomorrow between Manchester City and Chelsea. We're going to be getting the thoughts of Pep Guardiola in this final hour as well. You're listening to The Grill live on Dubai 103.8.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.